Then you want to try, for right now, I mean, I'm about to do the Great Debate series, and I have been given the arm of the debate, which says the IPSS is standard. I guess, you know, even defense lawyers have to defend the guilty sometimes. So I think the IPSS is certainly going to be an evolution, and there will be a new standard eventually. But right now it is. And I think that dividing patients into the low and intermediate one risk categories versus intermediate two and high risk, at least initially, is helpful, because you know that intermediate two and high risk patients, if you have a treatment opportunity, should be treated. The only patients who shouldn't be treated are ones who are truly so frail and debilitated that there would be no quality of life to salvage. But because of the newly available agents and because of the excellent clinical trials that are out there, patients should be treated. And those high-risk patients and intermediate twos are going to go bad quickly. They need to get on something soon. The low and the intermediate ones are more complicated, and certainly for patients who have an excellent performance status and quality of life and are not heavily transfusion dependent, currently an argument can be made to watch them closely. I think that some of the newer subclassifications that are coming out, which are going to refine the IPSS, are going to make it easier to pick out from the low risk group who are the ones who, even though they're being called low risk, aren't really that low risk and would actually possibly benefit from some therapy up front. Once I divide out the patients, I firmly believe that despite the fact that there are three FDA-approved agents in this disease, we are not done yet, and clinical trials should absolutely be number one priority whenever possible. These drugs, if you look at the reports of efficacy, none of them is good enough that we can say we're done. We've, you know, cured the disease, we're finished. And I do try to have trials open for all IPSS groups, and when possible, we'll put appropriate patients onto a clinical trial, which may involve a combination of a hypomethylating agent and something else, or a chemotherapy, or something that would lead them on to a stem cell transplant. I think that because of the azacitidine data that have been published and that have actually been added on to the FDA labeling of the drug, suggesting a survival benefit and a delay in transformation to AML of the higher risk diseases, although I don't think the drug is perfect, and I do think that there's room for much improvement in ongoing clinical trials, I do think patients need to understand that there is a drug out there with a survival benefit, which is unprecedented in the disease, and which certainly offers an opportunity to be treated if they can't be on a clinical trial or if it's not feasible, they are on a drug which has had clear benefit. And for those patients, what I do is try to get into the subtleties of whether or not some of the modifications that have been proposed in azacitidine administration are reasonable for patients with high-risk disease. So for patients with the higher-risk disease, again, when a drug has a survival benefit in MDS, which has not been shown before, clearly, if I'm the patient, I want you to be giving me the drug exactly how they gave it to the guys who had the survival benefit. And yet that involved subcutaneous administration, which is frankly unpleasant and difficult for a lot of patients. And it also involved 7 days of therapy instead of five. So the question is, are some of the data suggesting that 5 days are equivalent to seven and that sub-Q is equivalent to IV, are those strong enough to actually recommend those changes for patients? And I spend a lot of time talking to them about it. And basically, if possible for right now to follow the original trial parameters that led to the survival benefit, that would be ideal, just until we know more about how patients are doing with manipulations. But that said, if somebody's life is utterly miserable with the sub-Q injections, or if it's completely impossible for them to follow the schedule, I will support them proceeding on the modifications that I had mentioned, and to try to get three or four cycles under their belt, followed by another marrow assessment and a close review of their peripheral counts to see what we think the drug is actually doing. For those higher risk patients, again, for anybody who's under 50, I am currently trying whenever possible to get those patients into a stem cell transplant after hypomethylating agent therapy. For patients 50 and above, it's on a case-by-case basis, depending on how good we think the response is to a hypomethylating agent and what the transplant option really is. Is it a sibling? Is it a mismatch? Is it an unrelated donor? Is it, you know, what kind of risk are we talking about with the transplant? And clearly my hope would be, and this is with all due respect to my transplant colleagues, but my hope would be to jettison them completely and to have such good drugs in our own realm that we wouldn't need to send patients to transplant, because frankly, there are many who have a very nice response ongoing with whatever treatment they're getting for MDS and then end up with graft versus host disease or some other complication of transplant and sort of wonder why they did that to themselves.